7-1 history. Okay, go ahead.
What, in the National Union, mm-hmm. Union magazine, they had a thing in there where they stopped doing that in New York, going to the joint, making you join a union and stuff, or giving you, fine if you mm-hmm. caught playing on the scale, because it said if the scale is $80, some of them guys have been making gigs for $30 and $40, that's the only way they could get some, paid a little bit of rent and eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they cut that out, running mm-hmm. them down like that. Mm-hmm. Well, at the time, we hadn't. Mm-hmm. And I was intending to bring that up
mm-hmm.
because music is not a place, scales, musically, is not the same as a scale where you're working 8 hours a day mm-hmm. in a factory. Because mm-hmm. in our business, you can't draw nobody. You can't ask for no money, really. Mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. We was lucky to have a guy like Joe Robinson who paid us whether we drew any money or not, mm-hmm. anybody.
Right.
But if you open a joint, and I want to bring my band in there, and I want $85 a message for five pieces, mm-hmm. and I can't draw nobody, you can't pay me that, you know?
Yeah.
But he could, but the average guy can't, you know?
Yeah.
And this gig, them gigs been going on. I done, all them guys in there talking that job, I done made gigs with most of them, and I done worked, all of them made, mm-hmm. like when the scale was $15, mm-hmm. I done made for $10,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And they're still doing it.
Yeah.
It's 96, they're still doing it.
Yeah, that's right, because I... I had a little group a few years ago, and I went over to Station Square, talked to a couple of promoters,
mm-hmm.
and there was a guitar and a bass player over there making a gig, and I was going to bring a trio mm-hmm. in there, but it was about $90, $100. Mm-hmm. And them two cats was making, I would get...
Less than $50.
Oh, but two of them, they would make $30 a piece.
I know.
So I knew all that was going on, you know. But that's what I was going to, I don't like, that's like, tell me what I can't do, what you doing.
Mm-hmm,
I'm
mm-hmm.
doing vice versa, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people that don't know, but all of them make cheap gigs.
Excuse me.
You make, actually, when you're gigging, especially if you ain't got a day job, you can't turn down nothing.
You can't turn down nothing, yeah.
And after I got into that, I barely something turn down anything, even when I was working,
mm-hmm.
because I still rather play and make a little bit of money and not be playing at all.
Because
mm-hmm. mm-hmm. after you find out you got to draw somebody, really, if you draw somebody, you can, I want $1,000 a night.
Yeah.
The man ain't going to say nothing. Okay. Yeah. But I look at you, look at him, come out $500 a night, look at you, what?
Yeah.
You insane.
Well, when did you get started in music? Did you play in elementary school or junior?
I started in high school.
High school.
Yeah, I started in Shenley. So I graduated in 42, so I probably started around 40.
Early 40s.
40, 41 mm-hmm. or something. Yeah.
Did you start on bass or violin? Or?
Yeah, I started on bass.
Yeah.
And I did take a semester or two, alto horn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's one thing,
uh-huh.
like a trumpet. Yeah. And I got in the union in 46. I didn't take no lessons until I got grown. I could pay for them myself.
Yeah. Did you study with Joe Wallace?
No, I studied with Billy.
Billy.
I studied
Billy.
What's this little guy's name? Billy studied off first, too. I studied off for a while.
I know who you're talking about.
Clemens.
Clemens, right, yeah. right.
I studied off Clemens for a while. Then I didn't continue with him. And mm-hmm. when I went back, I stayed with Billy Lewis. Took lessons off Billy, but maybe seven to nine years.
Yeah,
he took me through all the books and studying all the different techniques, different things.
Right. When you come out of high school, did you go to the Army? When you come out of high school, did you play in the Army?
I played
in the Army bands.
Not in the ones. I went to engineers and took basic training, and for 13 weeks, then went overseas. And I got in a band. I decided to have a band for the regiment over there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that's how I got to play, and didn't have to do too many
mm-hmm.
regular soldier chores
mm-hmm.
after I got in the band.
Because mm-hmm. I remember when I was in high school, and this had to be 44 or maybe 45, because
mm-hmm.
you were working with Walt.
Yeah.
Because you guys come down to my school one evening. I don't know what kind of an affair it was, but I know... mm-hmm. You came down to the school because I remember you and I'm trying to think who all was in that band. Calvin Folks,
yeah. And, Martin Kimes.
Yeah, there was...
Don Twyman, Honey Gunn.
Huh.
Yeah, Cobra, that's what we call Honey
Gunn. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, actually, me and Bradley Blewett started a quintet.
Mm-hmm. We played tenor, didn't he?
Huh? Bradley Blewett. Tenor,
yeah.
It was Martin Kimes in it, Don Twyman, Cobra, and me, and Calvin Folks. We went in the Army, and Walt Harper took the band over.
Okay.
And Ray Brown took my place.
Okay.
And then we come back, Ray Brown had went to New York, and wasn't long ago we got with Walt,
mm-hmm.
both of us, and I played with Walt a while.
Mm-hmm. When did you get out of the Army?
45. December 45,
Yeah, okay. And you said you joined the Union in what, 40?
46.
Yeah. And who was president when you joined?
Hintz?
Yeah. Hintz Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was president.
And then Stoney took over after that.
Well,
was Brown Leroy the secretary at that time or recording?
No.
No?
Melendez. Melendez, right. Secretary under Hintz.
Okay.
Melendez, Hintz Jackson. Jim Baldwin or something.
Yeah,
on the board or something.
Business aid board or something.
Yeah. Melendez, I think, was secretary that he passed away. Mm-hmm. I got so he couldn't do it no more. Mm-hmm. I forget the other member's name on the board.
Was Cedrus Birch on the board at that time?
I think it was vice president. If he wasn't on our first one, he became vice president later.
Okay.
It was something, yeah.
Was George Childers, was he very active at that time?
He didn't get active. We come from Moody's Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only time I remember him being pretty active with Moody's Liberty.
Okay. And you say you started playing in high school.
Yeah.
Just before you come out of high school.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember what did you do many MPT, you know, like the transcription things through the union? Did you do many of those when you first, in your early days with the union? Did they do many MPTs during those days?
I don't know when transcription started. With Walt, we didn't do a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it started then.
Okay, maybe they weren't in existence then.
I don't remember. When I was living up on Francis Street, they had my own quartet. I got quite a couple times then.
Mm-hmm. You get them through from the union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sign up.
Right.
Get at least four a year.
Right. Because they pay your car.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea.
Yeah. And like now I don't know no cats in the union if I got one. You in the union,
yeah.
I'm in the union. Most of the other cats, pianos and drummers, ain't.
Yeah. Well, it's to a point now, almost, well, as far as an MPT, yeah, because they have to sign a slip.
Yeah.
But, there's this thing now of non-union and union musicians being on the same stand, which I don't think 471 allowed that. You know,
no, it didn't. 60 didn't either then. Didn't none of the union allow back then.
Mm-hmm.
They'd get out there and you come up and you got somebody riding your band and one in the union, you got to pay me up or get off the stand that night.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they'd let you go. You say, well, I'll give it to them or make him pay it.
Right.
They might let you go, but they can't come out and catch you no more.
Because I know George, because they used to, like you're saying, they used to work out a thing where you pay it off.
Yeah.
We'll let you play, but you got to give us some money.
Yeah. Yeah, because like them plays and things you were in and Cecil and Jay Willis got into it. They had to join
the union. Well, see, mainly because that public theater, the public theater where they're at, that's considered like a premium house.
Yeah.
And the money, because they made good money.
Yeah.
There.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they would have been able to get away with it out of Hartwood. Out there at the county lot where I was.
Yeah.
See, because that's just a...
a summer thing,
right?
Like, yeah.
But the public theater, that's a different situation, and the union did scream at them, they had to join.
Yeah, anybody come through here, like any big town needs band members. You have to be in a union.
Yeah, yeah. Did you do any? Have you been on the road with any groups? Playing. You know.
Yeah, I went on the road. I just come out of high school. I went on the road with somebody. King Kolak.
King Kolak. Yeah,
he was down in Roosevelt. Yeah, I went on the road with him.
Yeah.
For about 6 months.
Uh huh. What was it? A big band or just a ten or?
That was a big band.
Big band.
About at least nine to ten
nine
pieces.
Nine to ten pieces. Oh, okay.
And a show, chorus, right. Girls, comedians, right. Dancers.
Right.
I went with him, and there's a cat coming from New York named Eddie Robinson. I played a little bit with him,
uh-huh.
And I come back home, and after I went to the Army.
Uh-huh. Did you go to any music school?
No. Yes, I did. I went to Duquesne University for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And I goofed up.
Was that on the GI?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I goofed up and keep all my grades up a C or above.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I had to cut out.
Uh-huh.
But I wasn't really ready to go there,
mm-hmm.
Really. I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, really, like I run into kids now, the same principal. Nobody let them know what's really happening in college.
Right.
You think,
right.
When you go to college, they don't want you to be.
Yeah.
They want you to be a darn near professional, really.
Right.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I wasn't really ready to.
Was it an audition for you to get in?
No, it was accepting you then.
Just accepting
you. Like Carnegie Mellon, I think, was it was. But little colleges like Duquesne was accepting practically anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the best music school, the best mm-hmm. rated one at the time, Duquesne
mm-hmm.
did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to take nobody. I'd have never made it with an audition,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what I was going to say about Billy. He went to, he wanted to get his doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
He went to college in Cincinnati. I forget the other city, but the one in New York. The mm-hmm. one in New York, the cat on the head of the bass section was the
mm-hmm.
one that got to put out transcribe the bass book that most of us used
mm-hmm.
to take lessons out of.
Mm-hmm.
Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
And he auditioned Billy. Billy played, in fact, he had me over there listening to him,
mm-hmm.
see was he playing all the notes
mm-hmm.
clean and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he went up and auditioned to the cat, and the cat called a couple other professors and listened to him. And then told him, I'd never give a doctorate on a bass,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because he wasn't doing it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he wouldn't fight it. That's mm-hmm. when the black organization would start up strong, fighting them kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't
mm-hmm.
even go fight it.
Pursue
I tried my best to
push him into it.
Yo, man,
yeah.
I told him, you got the chance, you can
yeah.
do it.
Right.
If you couldn't play, the cat wouldn't call nobody
right.
else in there to listen to. He wouldn't listen that long himself
right.
if you wasn't doing it right.
Yeah.
You got your master's and everything. He wouldn't
yeah.
fight it. It hurt me,
mm-hmm.
you know.
in your travels with King Kolak and so, did you make any other contacts with any other bands out there, you know, to kind of hook up and do any other additional traveling?
Not only that one with Eddie Robinson, I played
mm-hmm.
a little bit, but I don't know,
uh-huh.
it wasn't too long I played with him, that's all.
And then you came
and
back
come
him.
Out. I went in the Army and come out.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a while after I come out of the Army before I started taking lessons off of Billy, because
mm-hmm.
I was going to Clement for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting around the middle of the 50s or somewhere around the 60s. I was getting
mm-hmm. How long were you with Walt? How many years did you play with him?
Let me see.
Did you get your gig back when you come when you
when
got
I come out the service? Yeah. I wasn't playing when I went in the service. Bradley Boone, we had the band.
Oh, it was
when
your
come,
band.
Bradley, yeah, we started.
Okay.
When I come out in 45, I played with Walt until 50.
Okay.
I played with him in 50.
Yeah. Who was in the band with Walt at that time?
Let's see.
Lee
played. Let's see. I think Piggy Lawson was drummer first, and then Harold Lee. And Harry Nash on trumpet.
Yeah.
Gordon Austin on trombone.
Do you remember a girl who played saxophone with Walt back in them days?
A girl?
Yeah.
Wasn't a girl playing around that time. Because
Jerry was trying to tell me about a girl that took play with Walt. Not,
because back in then, on the reed section was Bradley Bull and Nate and Earl Crandall.
Right, Earl Crandall. Right.
And Joe Porter played trombone. And he left, come up after Gordon, I think, or before Gordon, one or the other. And Harry Nash and Gordon, I think they just had three rhythms, two trumpets,
and a trombone,
and a rhythm section, and three horns and two trumpets, five and three, eight or nine people with a vocalist.
Right.
Tiny Irwin was singing with us. And then after Piggy left, Harry Lee started playing drums with us.
Did you do anything with Joe Westray back in them days?
Yeah, I made some few gigs with him. When he needs, like, he's getting a jam. It's the last time I made a gig with him. He had a gig with Brooke Benton. Brooke Benton was somewhere downtown for one night at a cabaret or something. And get the name of the boy. He went to Detroit and they played bass guitar, but he couldn't read. And I made a gig for him. And he'd been in Detroit. I heard he was doing good. I think his name was Mitchell something. So he had a group going pretty nice.
Did you ever hold any offices in the union? Were you ever on the board or anything like that? Nothing. Just a member.
Yeah, I never.
Dues payer.
Never run for none of the tribes. Because it's a lot of work, especially if you get up in them offices, especially like secretary and treasurer. Secretary work is a lot of work. Everybody be on you about different things, and, you know.
Did you, when you first started going down to the club, you know, were you very impressed at the groups, the musicians that would come through and play and, you know, like that?
Oh, yeah. Down the hill?
Yeah.
Because all the big times would come by there. I saw Tatum in there at a concert. He was there. In fact, I was lucky enough to be could stand right at the end of the piano and watch him too. Yeah. Man, I didn't know that much about piano. I knew a little bit about going to music school. You know, this cat. That's when I found he could do orthodox fingering and do the same thing unorthodox. Mm-hmm. He'd do the take two flats, so take the thing, come back, and thought he was doing it that way. I said, "What?" he was really a phenom.
Did you do much, because up at the, what's it, the Washington Club and the Lowendai and Stanley's and you
Ritz,
know.
The little
Ritz, back there.
I played in the Ritz and Stanley's, Washington Club, Lowendai. In fact, one night when I was playing Walt's band, Walt got the gig down the club and he got the gig at Lowendai at the same night. And we started the club at 12 and had to end up at Lowendai about 1. So we went up Lowendai, and about 11:30, we grabbed our horns, run down the club, play a set, and run back and finish
back
up. And Farnell Gibson, he was all the way. Starts running out the club, he looked at us, we working
said, "You crazy."
Yeah. We didn't tell him nothing, I don't know what he said. We said something, kept on running. Just the trio of me, Nate, and Walt.
Did you ever do anything with, like, Billy Clinton and some of them old timers that used to play, like, down at, Duffy's, you know, down there, or Forbes?
Duffy's, yeah. No, I didn't. Honey Boy, that gig showed up for years.
And Brown was down there for a while, wasn't he?
I don't think. Brown used to be down at the Harlem Casino.
Harlem Casino.
He had the house band job down there, but I think when I first joined the union, '46, Honey Boy was in Duffy's. And they talked, he'd been there for quite a few years before that. Because I used to laugh. Edgar Willis was in his group, Ruby.
Coleman.
Coleman, played alto. And this guy played trumpet. His brother lived down here on Western. Can't think of his name now. Died. Andy Woods.
Andy Woods.
Yeah, Andy Woods.
Okay,
And Edgar was playing bass. And I used to jive him because Honey Boy had a little gangster thing going. Like he come in, his band had to come in with him. When he got up to leave, they had to leave with him. I used to laugh and dialing about that.
Well, they couldn't associate down there. I mean, you know, was that the situation? They weren't allowed to sit at the table, mingle with the crowd and all that?
I really don't know.
Because I've heard some stories. Yeah, because I've heard some stories. Because Carl was telling me something, and Gambrell was telling me some things about, you know, those kinds of things. And I think, and I don't want to say Brown's name and Honey Boy's name, but those clubs where they couldn't sit at the tables, where they couldn't mingle, you know.
I wouldn't be surprised because the Harlem Casino, I don't know about it. Neither one of them, because Harlem Casino was black, but it catered to white, most of the white trade, because most black people couldn't afford them nightclub prices, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, at that time, because most of the places had that kind of prejudice going on, and you could play.
Right, right.
But you couldn't do too much in England.
Yeah, you can't drink with us.
You
can't drink with us.
They can see you drink or something, but you can't sit on the table.
Or they'll have a room in the back, you know, that's the, you know, where the band goes, and then whatever you want, they'll bring it back to you. Couldn't mingle with the crowd.
That is something.
Do you remember the Savoy Ballroom, you know, the one...
the original one.
The original one, and dances and things that was going on in there?
Yeah, down in Soho, in the center.
Yeah,
I was in there. I went in a couple of times to see a couple of bands. The one I remember most was John Kirby when he had that little sextet.
With Charlie Shavers.
The rhythm group Charlie Shavers. Billy Cowell. Billy Cowell played. Buster Bailey.
Buster Bailey.
John, who was the drummer? I can never remember the drummer's name.
Forget. I met
Maxine
Billy.
Sullivan.
I met Billy Cowell when in 61. I was up at Idaho. Albert took me up there with Choker Campbell, and I was playing that show up at it's Northern Michigan. It's a summer resort, and we stopped in Detroit for a little while. And Maynard Ferguson came through with that 10-piece group, and Billy Cowell was playing piano with him.
Oh yeah,
and I, you know, happened to be in Minor Key, I think was the name of the at a club, and we went down. I think it was on a Monday night or something like that. And I went by, and that's when I met him. Mm-hmm. And he knew Frank Galbraith, an old trumpet player that was with Lloyd with me. You know, because Billy Cowell wasn't no kid, you know.
Right.
And he had some years on him.
Yeah.
And Frank was an old cat, too, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's funny how, you know, when you call a name, and then you hook it up somewhere with somebody else, you know.
Yeah. That's bad. When I went with King Kolax, Jug was in Reed section.
Was there very many other Pittsburgh guys in the band with you? You know,
no other. All of them from Detroit. Chicago.
Yeah.
Cause that's when I first ran into Junkies. I didn't know Jug wasn't a junkie that time, but the drummer was. I mean, you know, the band's all pyramided up.
Right.
And that junkie's pissing all the way down the steps to the top on the stage. Yeah. I didn't know what's happening with it. I was thinking, what?
Yeah. All messed up.
Yeah.
Because I know when I was with Lloyd, we had a drummer, Ben Dixon, Washington, D.C. Can't play.
Yeah.
He was all messed around, you know.
Yeah.
It's a drag, you know. And baritone player that was with us, Marvin Warwick.
Yeah.
You know, and he later died. You know. But they get themselves all strung up, you know, and messed up like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I did go somewhere with another. Leroy Brown was a cat here one time. He called himself Wild Bill something. I don't know if it was Davis or not. He played tenor, though. He's Wild Bill something. And one night he's here, I don't know. Was he on a gig? Anyway, he needed a bass player, and he was opening up in Springfield, Ohio. And about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, Brown called me. I don't know where I could get there. The cat gave me plane fare to fly down there. And it's a terrific baritone saxophone from Detroit was in that group, and Tate Houston.
Right.
Yeah, he could play.
Yeah.
And this cat that became Sammy Davis's musical director.
Todd Rhodes.
Yeah, was it Todd or John?
John Rhodes.
No. I don't remember.
Rhodes is his last name, though. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a piano player.
It's Todd Rhodes.
Yeah.
So you're talking about
He was in that band.
Yeah.
because I saw him in the first panel. He was Sammy Davis, musical director. I said, damn. Because I had never seen him. I've seen Tate since then, but I know that good with Rhodes no more.
I think he died.
Yeah, Tate did. He did.
No, I mean Rhodes. I think he died too. Yeah, I think he died.
Yeah, Tate had an alcohol habit.
Yeah.
He had an alcohol habit a mile long. He sounded like Freddie Tooks. I guess it's big.
Yeah.
Couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Past the second set.
Right.
The alcohol had messed up, man.
And that's a drag about Freddie, though.
Yeah.
Well, he could play.
Yeah, beautiful technique. He could play.
Yeah.
And, I didn't know it got that bad. We was, we had a joint over here on Penn Avenue near West Bend Hospital up there.
Oh, yeah.
I forget the name of it. Anyway, I was over on a gig. I don't know if I was on my own gig or with somebody else. Anyway, Freddie was a pianist. But the time second said he couldn't make it.
He's out of it.
Yeah, it was my gig because it was Tinky Dunn's son that had the gig.
Right.
Had the joint.
I know the
rather.
Joint, yeah. Pink Poodle.
Something, I don't remember
something like
name.
That. Yeah, I know he's on that.
Yeah, and I told Brett, I said, man, I can dig it. You want to like get high? I like to get high.
Yeah.
But can't you just tape it off till you get
through,
get
take your business
the,
first.
The gig, then all from the gig time to the next gig time.
Take your
get
business.
Get tough. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, see, that was a problem. When I had that group and Freddie was in the band, and it was coming. He wasn't really... You know,
not
too,
that far,
right? But it was a problem, dealing with him then, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute. And then when the merge, just before the merge, 65, 66, they had that band leaders meeting out at Joe Westray's.
Yeah.
When Hal Davis and officers and all from Local 60 came out, and they explained to us the responsibilities of a band leader.
Yeah.
You know,
and
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I got my little notebook. And all that, and I went home and I read through it, and I said, "That's the end of it." And I closed the book on being a band leader. I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
I'd have to go wake Freddie up, you know, and help him dress.
Yeah.
Go to the gig, and worry, you know, if there's someplace where there's booze, you're in trouble, and then bring him, pay him, you know, and then bring him home. And I said, "This, you know, I'm not dealing with children.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
These grown men, you know, particularly when you got to pay somebody.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, Bumpy was, he used to goof up. I was at a gig somewhere. I don't remember. And he was, I said, "Well, I'll pick you up at 7 o'clock. Honk, honk. He come out the half dressed.
Right.
So I said, "Bumpy, now." You like to play it. I do too. Now, if you want the gig, you got to be ready when I blow the horn, because I don't want to be late, because I get late, then I got to suck ass to the owner.
Yeah. You got to pay the consequences.
And I don't want to do that, because we can't ask for too much money no way. Now, if you don't want the gig, let me know, I get somebody else. So I ain't go up, you know, I can understand you know, whatever's happening with you. But from then on, I said, honk, honk, you got my because, you know, I don't, like you said, the grown men, and business is business.
Yeah.
And it's enough problem getting a gig.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have to put up with something like that, and you know. And I never had no problem with the owners or the musicians, because I don't, whatever the problem is, we got to make the gig.
Right. You take care of business first.
You don't want to take care of business. Let me know, I get somebody else, just give me 2 week notice. Something, and I do the same. Because I had a thing set up when I was kind of in the circle, I'd make a gig. I'd have a gig booked. Like somebody would call me for a gig. If I can get a gig, pay more money, if I can get somebody capable to take my place, I'd go and send somebody else. Yeah,
right.
But that was understood when you asked me, could I make the gig? You know, I had that understood at the beginning.
But a lot of times, though, a lot of proprietors and particularly black club owners and so forth, they don't want to accept subs.
Yeah.
You know, you had a hard time doing that.
No, I ain't no problem with.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
I got told Cat, it's like a guy, like Buzzy Robinson was hard to get along with, for instance. But I ain't never had no problem, because I've been in business myself, like Cat just said. Buzzy had a habit, the gig in Friday, don't wait till the last minute to tell you if you can work next week.
Well, right.
You know what I told him? I called him and said, "Buzzy, say, I want to know. You need me next week? Because if I don't have a gig, I ain't got no band.
And I don't want to be holding my musicians up. They turning down gigs with other guys.
Right.
And
right.
come up, and I tell them last minute, right. I, man, you can't, and then they don't turn down a gig.
Right.
He said, okay, well, you work this week or no, yeah. you don't. You know, yeah. Right away.
Yeah.
That's your dial smarter.
Yeah.
Well, I had that. Well, I had a problem with Chicago because I'd have to call Wednesday to find out about working that Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, but. Yeah. But I know I've noticed. Now you talk in terms of sending subs.
Yeah.
Now, the position I'm in, a lot of times, I'll get calls and I'll go and sub. But I know, you know, it's hard. I mean, guys, take a Brother Harper for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, and his band is identified by that tenor saxophone sound, mm-hmm. of, you know, or the tenors, mm-hmm. you know, one or two, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you send a replacement, you know, people, you know, it's like, and it's hard to find two guys that are going to play the same.
Oh,
you know, that's going
to
keep
used to each other.
Yeah, see.
Well,
and,
actually, well, I had understood, I never had that problem because anybody say something to me about, like, the owners, you talk about the proprietors.
Yeah, but no. Well, I'm talking more in terms of an established group sound because you know, from week to week. I mean, I don't think you had the you know, like over a 6 month period of time, you had the same three or four guys working with you. You know, piano player, horn player, or whatever. You know, so that you know you can kind of get away with it in that sense. But
Normally I would never